Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world, coming to you directly from the SiriusXM studios in New York City. I am Jake Mintz. That is Jordan Schusterman, and you are munching on a big apple.
I am not, thankfully, for the listener's sake. I am not just crunching into this microphone, but I am sitting across from you. Now, Jake, we have, of course, recorded podcasts in person together, but normally it does not include nearly as much expensive equipment as we are currently lucky enough to be using here in the SiriusXM studios in Midtown Manhattan. This feels way too, like, to be doing this podcast on the 36th floor of any building is kind of weird.
This is not a Midtown.
No. Nothing about this podcast screams Midtown Manhattan. But you know what? We're here and we're doing it. We're going to talk about baseball. It's Friday. I'm in New York City because there are Dominican Winter League exhibition games happening. That's the only thing that could get me to come back to the city. I have not been back to New York in basically 2 years, even though I used to live here, and I don't live that far away now. But it's nice to be back, I will say. It is nice.
It's good to have you here. There are 8 million people in this city, and all of them can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. I smell an email mailbag episode on the horizon.
Oh, yes, yes. I know we've been teasing that for a while, but trust me, it's coming. But we still have news, and we have been teasing a free agency preview, and so a good chunk of this episode is indeed going to be that. We are going to be looking at it from the team perspective. We're going to kind of organize all 30 teams as to how relevant we expect them to be this offseason. So that's not just free agency. That's just kind of how much we'll be talking about them in the hot stove happenings and whatnot over the next few months. But before we get to that breakdown of all 30 teams and how much we expect to talk about them on this podcast this offseason, we have some other news to talk about. We're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani donating a bunch of baseball gloves. Scott Boras spoke at the GM meetings. Other things happened at the GM meetings that we will surely be laughing about. Jason Benetti, former guest on this podcast and one of our dearest friends, has a new baseball team to call games for, and we will be previewing the Lidom exhibition games taking place at Citi Field tonight and Saturday and Sunday afternoon. I am so excited for those. But where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin with the 1.2 billion baseball gloves that Shohei Ohtani is donating to school children in Japan.
Here's a good place to start. Are there 1.2 billion baseball gloves on Earth?
No.
No chance.
Not even a shot.
Like, not even remotely close.
So we have discussed the idea of Statistus.
The
Greek
god
of unanswerable stats, right?
Yes.
There are a number of baseball gloves on planet Earth.
Yeah. Well, actually, can we go back to what you just referenced, Statistus?
Yeah.
Let's not gloss over that, because I don't think this is something we've talked about on the show
Statistus,
in quite some time.
Yeah. The Greek god of stats, who can determine stats that are otherwise indeterminable.
We, you know, living in the world in 2023, and we have the internet, we have all these amazing research tools and smart people that can answer all these questions for us. This is questions that cannot be answered. Sure, you can come up with estimates, but how many baseball gloves are there on Earth is a tough question to answer that only a higher power can.
Nate Silver, no shot.
Not even close. So the reason we are talking about this is because the MLB Twitter account tweeted out a quote or a statement from Shohei Ohtani, which I assume is translated from Japanese here. But this is very nice. So this is from the MLB Twitter account. Shohei Ohtani is giving baseball gloves to every elementary school in Japan. :
First of all, doubt that.
But let's just let Shohei speak for himself, okay? Here's the quote or the statement. I'm happy to announce that I will be donating approximately 60,000 youth gloves to every elementary school in Japan. That comes out to around 20,000 elementary schools. I'm hoping the kids can spend their days happily with a lot of energy through baseball. Now, before we start making jokes, hell yeah.
Cool. Great.
Like, not that we didn't think Shohei Ohtani was a great person who, you know, gives back to his community, whatever. But, like, amazing. We support all, generous donate. Like, this is a great way to use your platform, use all the money you have, use all the connections you have with all the different baseball companies to give a bunch of free gloves, some amount of baseball gloves to kids. Amazing. But, okay, great. Now let's make some jokes.
But what's funny about this is the implication that he is donating 60,000 gloves per school.
Right. Because that's approximately 60,000 youth gloves to every elementary school in Japan.
That cannot be possible.
Yes. But again, when he says that comes out to around 20,000 elementary schools. So
does that
that's
mean he's
the
giving
part,
three gloves to each school? That's not enough.
But that makes more sense than 60,000 gloves for each school.
It does, but three is a horrible number to give.
Yes.
Four makes sense because then you can have two groups of people playing catch.
Oh,
three,
that's true. You might as well give two
might
at that
as well
point.
Give two.
And then give, right, and then maybe give some to some high schools also.
Yeah, like I would rather give four gloves to like 15,000 right. elementary schools.
So I would say that like there's a decent chance, like whether something's lost in translation here, like I do think this is kind of on MLB picking yeah. up this statement or quote and just putting it out there and not thinking people would look at the very specific references to numbers and be like, what's going on here? I know to your point, it doesn't really matter. So, okay, then what is your guess for, like, what got lost in translation here? Or what is your guess for, like, what do we think is the most realistic situation?
I think he's given some gloves away to a bunch of schools. Right. I think that's all yeah, it needs to be.
Right.
But they were trying to get specific so that it would seem impressive yeah. and large.
But if you had not given me numbers and you just told me, like, Shohei Ohtani is donating to elementary schools across Japan, I'd be like, hell yeah, man, that's great.
He's donating over 50,000 baseball gloves to children across Japan.
So, but now, just to be clear, though, 60,000 gloves, yeah, 60,000 gloves, is that's a lot of gloves. No matter how many different schools they're being distributed to, like, that's a lot of baseball gloves.
It is a lot, and the important thing is that it's too many for one school.
But not enough if we're giving them to all 20,000. Anyway, here, allow this to be a kind of general point and a point of emphasis and kind of philosophy for how we're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani this offseason, which is that while every baseball site is going to say something about Ohtani every single day,
ours included,
yes, but like I am not going to live on every single mention of him on it's going to be, not only is it pointless because we have once again, this is the other important thing about this statement. First, we've heard from him in months. This is like the first direct thing we've heard from Ohtani. Everyone wants to hear about his free agency. And he's like, don't worry, I'm donating 1.2 billion gloves, which is great. Again, happy for him. But the point is that, like, of course, there will be many reports that come out, most of which are not going to mean anything. We will do our best to cover them as they come. We will do a full Ohtani episode at some point. But this is much more entertaining as far as this stage of the offseason goes.
If he signs before Monday, that's on us.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani was not the only person to speak this week.
No. If this counts as speaking. Yeah. Yeah, no, he wasn't. This, what we're about to talk about, surely counts as speaking. Because this man likes to speak as much as any person in our baseball space. I would say as far as characters in the baseball universe, the enjoyment that this individual takes in saying words to other people is 99th percentile, if not the top.
That's Scott Boras, super agent. Does not have his own podcast is really a fault of the industry. We're here in the SiriusXM studios.
Why are we sitting here? Yeah, yeah. That's maybe more of a you know, if he was New York based, I'm sure he would have had something more substantial. But now he goes on podcasts, likes to talk. But the point is, Scott Boras likes to talk. Now, if you're an agent and if you're Scott Boras and you've negotiated over $1.2 billion worth of baseball gloves of contracts over the last 3-4 years, yeah, you're going to be feeling pretty good.
But every year at the GM meetings, which took place this week in Scottsdale, Arizona, he does bad stand-up where he makes a bunch of jokes about the various players he represents in that given winter. And we were given this year's cornucopia of dad jokes. Jordan, what stands out to you?
Yeah, so again, you know, for those unfamiliar, it's, right, dad jokes, puns. It's basically he delivers these lines about his clients as a way to tell us how great they are or what they mean to a certain team or a certain market or what they did mean. And so one of my favorites by far was what he said about Cody Bellinger. This is how he described his client, Cody Bellinger. Now, I will say, you know, last offseason when Cody Bellinger was a free agent, it was a little bit more tame. Cody Bellinger hadn't been good for a few years. So Boras, and I think he had some lines, but it wasn't like he wasn't going to bring out he was saving the good stuff for this winter, clearly, right? And here's what we get. Quote, when he came to Chicago, he just feasted on major league pitching. I think Chicago got the comforts of a full belly. So they're going to have to loosen their belts to keep Bellinger. Feasting, belly, loosen their belts. A holy trinity of Scott Boras disaster dad joke. So good. Just amazing stuff. Does that mean that I feel any better about the Cubs keeping him? It seems like he's kind of putting the pressure on them more than anybody else.
On Pete Alonso, we let him know that when it comes to the polar bear, we're not in contract hibernation.
Yeah, so not a free agent, no. To be clear, but that's talking about, you know, extensions with the Mets.
Some of these sound like Trump quotes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you think
of bronze, you think of third place. When it comes to Matt Chapman at third, you're always gold.
Here's this one. This was a predictable one. Reese Hoskins, friend of the show. The power of Reese, his leadership, all those things are really demonstrated in a major market and on championship levels, hitting championship pitching. I think Reese's pieces fit all team puzzles. Boo.
So the
boo.
We've discussed this before, and so have other baseball pods. Mm-hmm. Scott Boras's willingness to go up there multiple times a year and tell bad jokes is such a flex.
Yeah, absolutely.
He is saying, I am the best agent.
You can't do anything about this.
In the world, and I'm such a nerd and such a dweeb, and I'm going to make all of these blatantly unfunny jokes in front of the media, and I'm still going to earn my clients more money than anybody else.
He said, come and stop me, you know?
You can't.
Last year, I can't get over last year, Brandon Nimmo, whoever Pixar guy will be the lucky one to finding Nimmo. Brutal. But I love these. I hope he has some more ones prepared when we see him at the winter meetings, because I know he's got like kind of a second wave of these terrible jokes that we'll surely see. But the most important thing to know is that Scott Boras once again represents a large portion of the top of the market. Cody Bellinger, Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, Matt Chapman, Jung-Hoo Lee, the top position player coming over from the KBO. J.D. Martinez,
Not Yamamoto,
not Otani, but Boras will remain in the news. And you got to respect it, because what are you going to say? You're not the best of your job? I can't really say that. So anyway, that was the second most interesting thing that happened at the GM meetings, because as I just referenced with the Otani rumors at this kind of time of the offseason, most of what you're hearing GMs say is essentially meaningless. You have to really look super specifically. Unless they are saying, like, we need right-handed outfielders who make contact, which is something that Jerry DePoto said, like, most GMs are telling you very, very little about what they actually intend to do at this stage in the offseason.
Or they're going full Brian Cashman, spitting fire.
Right. If they're not, you know, defending their integrity and their use of analytics like Brian Cashman, most of the quotes that come out of the GM meetings are very little.
And so that is part of why we don't go to this. We have never been to this. It is kind of just an opportunity for the whole industry to hang out, which... Yeah. Understandable.
I do believe it is useful for the GMs to meet with each other. But as far as what is coming out through the media, it's really very little.
But what came out through the media
was this is something where I'm glad we got to experience from a distance.
There was a stomach bug making the rounds at the GM meetings.
Yeah.
Which it was so devastating that they ended it early.
Yeah, so it seems like the GM portion of it was maybe going to be over. There's like agent meetings. It's basically a whole week in Arizona. Some portion of this week was canceled because everyone was pooping. That's essentially what we learned. That is very unfortunate for everybody involved, for everybody who was involved in the pooping. But I would say that, like, this is, first of all, I hope this is a lesson learned. I hope this is not something we have to deal with at the winter meetings. I hope that we got this. Because this is a fraction of the number of people at the winter meetings.
I'm fasting at the winter meetings.
Just for safety. That's the thing. Of course, for a while, we were concerned about big gatherings from a novel coronavirus perspective. And you could say that's still a legitimate concern. However, this is a much more visceral issue that... Am I glad we learned this? Steph Apstein, I believe, is the one that delivered the bad news about all of this, which I appreciate. But again, if someone who's not there, it's like everyone's just laughing at them. Like, it's not really a situation. Like, if you were there, now you're like, oh, that's why I felt like this. Oh, okay.
I think there's a show must go on component to not just baseball, but sports in general, which tend to be very machismo and toxic masculinity. Oh. And it's like, oh, I'm injured. I'm sick. Like, I can just truck through this. And I like that the poops derailed this.
Yeah, that's, but it's like, it's this different category than like, oh, like playing through, you know, a sprained ankle.
You can't. Because
there's a different, this isn't pain. It's like, this is, all right, we don't have to talk about this anymore.
You can train your way. Like if Dave Dombrowski had like a broken foot, he'd be fine. You can't.
Toradol's not getting you through this.
No.
Okay.
Certainly not.
Like there's different levels of pain tolerance. Poop tolerance. Okay, all right. No more of this. This is very funny.
Speaking of people who are the shit.
Oh, perfect. Not the shits. The shit. Biggest news we have. We spent, earlier this week, we talked about a shocking in-division move where Craig Counsell abandoned his home team and said, I'm going to go manage the Cubs for way more money. Fair. Understandable.
Legitimate.
Then, that's a big deal, of course. Obviously, that'll have an impact on the Cubs' win-loss record to some degree.
Probably,
of course, and we understand that the fans who are now with Cubs fans and Brewers fans, they will feel some kind of way about it. However, we got more news later this week. Another in-division move, which I think is a significantly bigger impact on the fan experience for both teams, and that is Jason Benetti taking the Detroit Tigers broadcast job, becoming the voice of Detroit. Leaving the White Sox, a team he's been with for a long time, a team he grew up supporting, and now he is going to be the voice of the Tigers. Because the Tigers were like, hey, our broadcast hasn't been very good for a while. And if we can ask permission and say, hey, Jason Benetti, you're not too far away. You would come be immediately vault our broadcast from the bottom to the top. Hey, are you interested? And sounds like Jason was, and now he's going to be the voice of the Tigers.
I legitimately think Jason is the best.
Yes.
He is the best broadcaster. I don't know if the White Sox broadcast was the best broadcast. There's a distinction there. Why is Jason moving? Why is the best broadcaster in baseball moving from the team he's worked for in a bigger city, in a bigger market, a team he grew up rooting for, to a smaller team, smaller city, smaller market? I think it has a lot to do with the White Sox organization being kind of a
I mean, at the very least, I think it was also a combination of that. It was, we haven't spoken to Jason, but like, it seems like a good example of, if we want to compare it to the Counsell thing too, like the Tigers really wanted Jason Benetti,
Yeah.
And they made sure to make that happen.
So I actually did talk to Jason Benetti yesterday.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to read our conversation.
Oh, perfect.
For public. I said, love you, talk soon, etc. Congrats. Holy shit, this rules. Great stuff. Detroit, underrated town. You'll love it. Blah, blah, blah. He responded 7 hours later. Ha, ha, ha. Thanks, dude. So, there you
go. Wow. See, we want to take you behind the curtain. We want to make sure that people kind of know what these conversations are. So, I haven't spoken to Jason. I have nothing to I have nothing like that to reveal.
Yeah.
To bring here to get some real insight into, like, the mind of Jason Benetti.
But this is a big deal for Tigers fans because.
Massive deal.
If you're a Cubs fan, right, and you have Craig Counsell now. That is influencing your fan experience because your team is presumably better.
Yeah.
If you now get to listen to Jason Benetti call games for you, that is a direct emotional positive boost every single time
it's
you flip on the TV.
Actually part of the experience.
Correct.
We got an email from Alexander who said, hi, Ugla enjoyers. We haven't done Good, Bad, Ugla in a while. Sorry, it's not happening. But hey, consider this the Ugla of this Friday episode. Alexander says, I don't really have a team. If the right team signs Ohtani, that could change. Ooh.
What if the wrong team signs Ohtani?
We'll have to check back in. Typically, just throw in the best game at the time. Usually, that means I'll watch any matchup between prospective playoff teams. But my second choice is any game where I can listen to the Mets, Brewers, Padres, White Sox broadcasts. But Benetti moving will probably change that. So I'm curious as to which broadcasts y'all think are the best for different things. Best at explaining the sport well, most entertaining, most reasonable criticism of both teams, best at getting new viewers into the game, whatever other superlatives y'all want to give. Thanks and happy off-seasoning. Oh, off-seasoning.
I like that.
Alexander.
So Alexander.
Yeah.
Great. You're going to watch a lot of Zach McKinstry, my man.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, so he references Mets, Brewers, Padres, White Sox. Absolutely. That's been consistently near the top of my group. I mean, the Mets are seemingly pretty universally renowned as one of the best ones. And I think that even sustained into this year as they became a very unwatchable team. And I know people were still like, I will still throw the Mets on. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, I don't know if I think we're prepared enough to sufficiently grade every single broadcast here, but I do think it is a combination of enthusiasm. It is a combination of respect and appreciation for the other teams that they are watching. I think that's something that always comes across well. It's not necessarily about like people can that complain about home bias. I don't care. Like for the home broadcast to root for their team, like, yeah, I have no problem with that. But what I do want to see in a broadcast or hear in a broadcast is an appreciation of the other team, not necessarily a respect, but like that is, I think, something that I actually find more interesting from a local standpoint. I know people lose their mind over how much national broadcasts respect each and every team. That I think is way overrated and overblown, because when you're watching a national broadcast, every team thinks that they're not getting the exact right attention and you know, descriptions of their favorite players. But I think the ability to, when you have, if, say, for example, when you watch Benetti, when you watch Jason do a game and the White Sox are playing the Rockies, like, he's going to have stuff to tell you about the Rockies that he found interesting because he put in the work. There are some broadcasts, it's more of like, oh, like, who's this coming? Like, where did this guy come from? And like, that doesn't come across as well. I don't appreciate that. And as a viewer too, as someone who, as part of my job, like, I want to help people learn about the game and help people find out about new players and new things. That attitude does not, you know, resonate well with me. And the opposite, I think, comes true. And that's one of the things Jason is the best at.
I think the homerism bothers me mm-hmm. a little bit more mm-hmm. than maybe it bothers you. And it's difficult because if you are a broadcast, your audience is your fan base. And so you're going to do anything you can to keep that fan base tuning in. And often that means homerism, right? Mm-hmm. Like, with all due respect to John Kruk on the Phillies broadcast, he's not my cup of tea on there.
Sure.
I would imagine that there are a lot of huge Phillies fans who love listening to John Kruk
right.
be a Phillies fan on the broadcast. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a different strokes for different folks thing. However, for Alexander, mm-hmm. who does not have a team
yeah.
until Ohtani signs with the A's, right? For him, it's kind of a different process.
Yeah, and to your point, I think the concept of homerism on broadcasts, like what... It depends what you mean by that, right? Because obviously there's just like blatant, the tone changes when the good thing happens to the team versus the bad thing happens to the team. But then like what's more exhausting is just like assuming every replay is going to go your way. Assuming every umpire is out to get your team. That's where I also am like, this is not fun to listen to.
Any inside fastball has intent,
right?
And then there's something that some guys do where like there'll be a hit, like a fly ball. And you could hear the other commentator go, get out. Get out. Get
come,
out.
Come on. Come on. Please, come on please be home. Right.
Please be home.
So there's levels to that. I think that that's right. Because I want the, like, again, like, I like when the broadcaster is clearly very close with the team. Oh, I was talking to this player before. Like, I know this player. Obviously, we've talked about with Kevin Brown. You know, like, there's versions of this that are great.
Boog Shambi is great.
Boog's a great example of that, right? Like, that can connect us to the home team. That's a great feature, for sure. But I agree. Yeah, some versions of once you actually get into the action, calling the action, it can become a little annoying.
Speaking of home teams, Jordan, there is baseball happening in my hometown
yes.
of New York
on
City.
On November 10th.
On November 10th this weekend. Let's very briefly preview this, and then we'll take a break and come back with a little winter preview. Mm-hmm. This is unprecedented.
Yes.
Now, I understand that many of the folks listening to this have no or little idea what the Dominican Winter League is and why the Dominican Winter League playing exhibition games in New York City is freaking nuts, mm-hmm. but we will do our best to explain it to you. Very briefly, the Dominican Winter League... What MLB happens in America and mm-hmm. Toronto mm-hmm. during the summer and spring and the warm months. However, in the Caribbean, in Latin America, there are leagues going on in the winter and the off season mm-hmm. that are bigger deals in those countries than MLB is here. And the biggest of these leagues, the most competitive of these leagues, the most financially relevant, I would say, of these leagues is the Dominican Winter League, which is often abbreviated as LIDOM.
Yes.
Liga Dominicana.
Yes.
De baseball.
Yes.
Now, Jordan.
Hey.
You've not been in New York in a while.
I have not.
There are a lot of Dominicans mm-hmm. Dominican Americans living in New York. Did you know this?
I did know that when I was here, but now I think we're really going to know that tonight at Citi Field.
The two biggest teams in the Dominican Winter League, Tigres del Licey and Águilas Cibaeñas, who are more or less the Red Sox and the Yankees of the league, are playing a three-game set of exhibition games at Citi Field this weekend.
Yes.
In Queens.
Yes.
It will be very cold.
Yes.
The coldest game that many of these dudes have played in a long time.
Well, certainly in the Lidome game. I mean, this will be the coldest Lidome game in quite some time, that's for sure.
And it is the first opportunity for Dominican Americans who don't get to go home that often to see their teams in person in the States.
Yeah.
It is going to be a unique, fascinating baseball atmosphere, and you and I will be at all three games.
Yes, we're very excited for it. But yeah, as you mentioned, you know, the Yankees, Red Sox, but it's even more than that because, again, it's only six teams and in the league, and these two teams account for what percentage of the fan base? Of the fans? I don't know, over half.
I mean, way over half,
right? And they also, now, while these are exhibition games, it won't count for the standings. You know, it's also a rivalry because they have technically the same number of championships, 22, right? I guess Licey got their 23rd last year, but there's like, what years do you count? Because when did the league start? Whatever. There's all kinds of stuff. This is the kind of stuff that fans of these two teams argue about basically
all the
time, the whole year, like nonstop, because like there's two championships that Licey won before this version of Lidome that like, do you count those or do you not? They do, so that they can have more than Águilas. There's versions of that, but I'm so excited to see, like, we've seen versions of what it looks like to have a bunch of, you know, Latin American fans, Caribbean fans in the WBC, right? We saw it in Miami. But, like, this is a much more specific, much more targeted, much more passionate, much more, you know, personal in some sense. Of course, it's not necessarily, of course, it's all one country, but it is going to be it'll be a scene. I'm so excited for it.
I mean, you walk around Washington Heights for, like, 5 minutes and you'll see Licey and Águilas stuff.
Yes, yes. So, you know, and as for the who's going to be there, you know, it's definitely an interesting group,
Jordan,
of players.
Just say some names and then we'll take a break.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, Juan Lagares is the one I'm most excited for. Of course, someone who was a Mets legend in his own right will be playing center field for Águilas. He's been kind of a staple of that team for a long time. Some prospects like Alexander Canario with the Cubs, he'll be a part of this too. Christopher Morel also, so Cubs fans will definitely see both of those guys. Jonathan Villar is another guy who's been with Águilas for a long time, another Mets legend. And then as far as the pitching goes, we're going to have some, you know, it's like, okay, who are we going to see? Who are like the legends of the Dominican World League? The best pitchers down there are the guys that can show up in the middle of October or the beginning of November and just pitch, give you six innings, give you length. It's not about throwing, you know, 95 miles an hour. It's Nabil Crismat, it's Cesar Valdez, it's Ariel Miranda, the lefties coming in for Águilas,
Yunesky Maya.
Like it's a very, like, I'm seeing Denelson Lamet is on the roster for Águilas. I don't know the last time he was healthy and pitched. So it's a fun group, but at the very least it's not even really necessarily about the specific guys. For Licey, Emilio Bonifacio is essentially like the face of their franchise,
Derek
and
Jeter
has been for a long time. So he, of course, will be a part of it. But it's not even necessarily about the specific players. It's just kind of about having those logos, those jerseys, playing in a major league stadium in front of what is going to be a packed house in the middle of November. So very excited about that.
Very excited. Going to be very bizarre.
Yes.
Let's take a quick break, Jordan. And when we come back, we will run through all 30 teams and talk about their winters to be.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a Baseball Barbacast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they are all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. We somehow forgot to mention that the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim have a new old manager.
That's the how you win nowadays. I think it's been pointed out that the last three World Series winning managers were the three oldest managers: Bruce Bochy, Dusty Baker, and Brian Snitker, and Artie Moreno and Perry Minasian. We're looking out at the managerial landscape and thought, who can we bring in that will bring us some credibility and actually make people say, hey, good job, Angels. And in that sense, they have hired Ron Washington. Ron Washington, who you, I know, have gotten to know decently well during his time on the Braves coaching staff. He will be managing again. He has not managed since 2013, I believe, was his last year with the Texas Rangers.
14,
which I believe he was fired during that season. He was, of course, the manager when the Rangers went to back-to-back World Series in 2010-2011. That it's interesting because that time was so relevant, those Rangers teams during that time. And we've reflected a little bit on them during September and or during September and October and everything. But, you know, those 8 years were, I mean, that's his managerial experience, but with one team. And now he will be managing the Angels. My first question for you, Jake, is why Ron Washington for the Angels? What's your guess? Besides, he's old and the old guys have won.
So there, part of it is Perry Minassian, the GM of the Angels, used to work for the Braves. And so he has a relationship with Wash. That's part of it. There are many amazing things about Ron Washington that I respect. What I learned from him about being around him a decent amount this year covering the Braves is the level of unshakable conviction and belief he has in his players and their development. He is able to envision the end result of what a player can be and believes to his core that the player will get there. That is not the job of a general manager. You see what I'm saying? Like, to be a GM, you have to see the bad side of a player. But Wash is elite at having conviction in the dudes on his roster. Like, making Austin Riley a capable defensive third baseman. When Wash saw him, he was like, I can make that guy a good third baseman. We are going to get there. Now let's go. And we get there every day, day by day. And on the Angels, a team that is going to suck or be suck adjacent, having someone like Wash who can see the end result of some of these younger players, there's value in that.
For sure. Yeah, it is just an interesting contrast when you compare it to Bochy, you know, coming back and managing, or Dusty coming back and managing, where it was very clear for them, not that Bochy needed to win, but it was like, I ain't coming to do this to lose, right? Like, I'm here because I think I can win. And I'm sure that Ron Washington, there's a part of Ron Washington that's like, I can make these guys win, you know? And we can look at the roster, because it's easy for us to say, and say, why would we believe that the Angels are going to be good? Let alone what happens with Ohtani. Like, there's problems with this roster for sure. But it is interesting. I saw someone being like, yeah, you mentioned, oh, it'll be good for the young players, Zach Neto, Nolan Schanuel, right? Ohapi, stuff like that, Mickey Moniak, right? I saw someone was like, people think that he could help Anthony Rendon. And I was like, well, that would be very impressive. If Wash can get to Anthony Rendon, that would be a pretty amazing outcome. And in the way, in a version of getting Anthony Rendon back on track, now maybe we do have a shot at being a competent, you know, winning baseball team. Long way to go with the Angels. There's so many other problems here, as we've said with them. Same thing that we've kind of talked about with the White Sox. Like, ultimately, you can change a lot of things below ownership and below things at the top. It's going to be tough to trust them otherwise. But obviously, most of the baseball world is happy for Washington to have the opportunity to manage again.
Absolutely. And according to Bob Nightingale, who is always trustworthy.
Never wrong.
Wash is planning to hire a very black staff.
Okay.
Which is pretty, it's going to be a good group, good crop. Torrey Hunter.
Oh.
First base coach.
Okay.
Chili Davis. Okay. Hitting coach. Eric Young Sr., who freaking rules. That guy rules.
Yes.
Third base coach.
And was with him in Atlanta, obviously.
And then Clint Hurdle as bench coach.
Clint Hurdle, I saw some conflicting reports yesterday where Torrey Hunter was like, that's not happening. But again, Bob. Sometimes wrong. So we will see. Because I saw that Torrey Hunter he'd interviewed for the manager job and obviously did not get it. And so we'll see if he is amenable to being the first base coach. Either way, does sound like at the very least, you know, him bringing EY over is very cool and nice to see that they will stick together. And yeah, it'll, if anything, by the way, Phil Nevin apparently interviewing in San Diego. Is that what they need? Who knows? But good for Ron Washington, and he will be back. And now we also get to hear him talk more.
Oh,
that's the other thing. I mean, if you're a reporter, maybe you get to talk to Wash off the side, whatever, during BP. But generally, that's something we've missed out on.
He is the best to talk to.
Yeah. So
the best to talk to.
All right, let's do it, Jake. Let's talk about the baseball teams. We have sort of been putting this off, but over the last week or so, we've kind of started to formulate how we're going to visualize this offseason and how we're going to organize it in our heads and how we prepare for it. And so the way that we're going to do this is basically rank the teams by how relevant we expect them to be, how much their actions are going to make us talk about them over the next few months. That does not necessarily just mean rank them by how much projected war they're going to add over the course of the offseason. It is just, will they be doing things? Will they be in the news?
Newsworthiness.
From a transaction standpoint. Of course, Free agency is a huge part of that, but we know, you know, no one's really signed yet, so we have a long way to go here. Many over 100 free agents will sign with new teams. Many players will be traded, and these are the teams that we think we'll be talking about the most with regards to both of those parts of the offseason.
Like a mountain.
Mm-hmm. Like a mountain?
Let's begin at the bottom.
All right. I guess, that does make more sense. Sure. Let's count. I like counting up here. 30-1. Jake, we have kind of grouped these teams into six groups of five. We've sort of named them, but hopefully
really,
you guys can see how we sort of view these teams. So let's begin with our bottom five teams. 30, Oakland, 29, Colorado, 28, Kansas City, 27, Pittsburgh, and 26, the White Sox.
Let's begin with Oakland.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude. I mean, they are...
I assume there will still be more news and reports about where they're going and when they're going there and who's involved with that and all that mess. Unfortunate.
They're going to have to play in Oakland next year. Everyone knows they're moving to Vegas. It's going to be uncomfortable. They will sign a couple of veterans to one-year deals,
right,
like Gene Segura or AJ Pollock.
Yes, they will have to fill out the roster.
Randall Grichuk, that's what.
But otherwise, they are still at the bottom. Still a relevant news story from a transaction standpoint. They are at the bottom.
Number 29, the Colorado Rockies. The Colorado Rockies could sign Shohei Ohtani, or they could spend the whole winter on the beach.
Yeah.
Who the hell knows with these guys?
Remember, this is a team that already extended Charlie Blackmon before the end of the year. Love that for Charlie Blackmon.
They are the non-problematic North Korea of Major League Baseball.
They are in their own universe. Nobody knows what they're doing, why they're doing it. They're unpredictable. In that sense, they should maybe be higher. But as far as relevance and expectations for 2024, they are 29.
Kansas City Royals, 28. Two main storylines for me. One, Bobby Witt extension. There was some reporting from Ken Rosenthal that it's maybe more possible than previously thought. I'm a little skeptical if they've got the sauce to do it.
I mean, that'd be awesome.
It'd be great.
Make me feel a lot better. Like, it would make people shut up about being like, oh, are we just going to have to already trade him? Like, God, that's so depressing. So, yeah, that'd be awesome. But otherwise, I think when we thought this time last year, Royals, Tigers, who's in a better place? I think we got the answer this year, and that's why we're not talking about the Tigers in this group. So, Royals, prove us wrong, because other than Cole Reagans and Bobby Witt, I don't have a ton that I'm excited about.
If you're not going to spend money on good players, bring Zach Greinke back for another ride. The Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah.
At number 27.
This is another one where I wish I was feeling more optimistic about the future and more optimistic that they were ready to be a little bit more aggressive improving the roster. I hope so. I think that it was not as disastrous of a season as Kansas City, not as successful as a season as Detroit when you're talking about the rebuilding teams. So I would love to be wrong, but from a spending standpoint, we certainly know they're capped, and I don't really know what the trades that make sense for them are.
Quote from GM Ben Cherington, quote, "We've been mostly focused on starting pitching, both in free agency and trade. We would like to add to our position player group too."
Oh, did he say that at the GM meetings?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what I was talking about. The last team in this group is the Chicago White Sox.
Yee.
So, speaking of quotes, Chris Getz, who's now the new GM. Remember, they finally got rid of, Rick Hahn and finally moving on. It's like, oh, okay, all right, maybe, turning things over. And Chris Getz, to his credit, even though he's been part of the White Sox, regime to some degree over the last few years, here's what he said in Scottsdale. Quote, "I don't like our team."
Love it.
"We have to make
some
adjustments."
Come on out, fans. Buy some tickets.
"We have to make some adjustments to improve in 2024. When I say I don't like our team, we've got pieces that are talented and attractive that can be part of a winning club. But obviously, We haven't gone out there and performed. It's not a well-rounded club right now. We have to find players to come in here and help us get in the right direction. I mean, so true, bestie. I totally agree.
Dude, what is more relatable than a GM saying, I hate this place?
He also suck.
He
also had a quote that was like, no untouchables. That's interesting. Mostly from a Dylan C standpoint. There's a lot of free agent pitchers. I think there's also pitchers I'm excited for from a trade standpoint.
You know what's weird? Mm-hmm. Calling a player a touchable.
Right. Damn, that's a good point.
It's like, this guy is untouchable in trade.
No, but that's
what you can touch this guy.
Well, that's right. But that's why you say there's
touch
no. That's why you say there's no untouchables, as opposed to we have some touchables. We have
the
some
Brewers,
touchable players.
The Brewers, Brewers, who we'll get to, they're like touchable.
we're going to get to them in a second. The point is that the White Sox, like, that is a very bad roster right now.
Yeah.
And so they could make some more interesting trades. Free agency-wise, they're looking for bounce-back candidates that they can trade next summer.
And they're not going to bump up payroll. Like,
no,
the payroll's going down.
Very
sure.
much, definitely not.
Next group of teams. I'm just going to start. Number 26.
25.
25. Good counting, Jake. High five. Cleveland Guardians. They hired a new manager, Stephen Vogt. Mm-hmm. Last year, they spent money on Josh Bell, like the biggest free agent contract in Guardians history, and then they traded him 3 months in.
Yeah. So they need people that can hit the ball out of the infield. I don't know how they're going to acquire those people. Are they going to trade Shane Bieber? Are they going to trade some of the other pitching? I don't know. They've just been so frustrating.
They're just
so frustrating.
If there's one thing we know about this organization, they are very difficult to trade with.
Yeah.
They have that reputation.
You say that, right? And then who have they traded away? They've traded away Nolan Jones. They traded away Yiner Diaz. They traded away Yandy Diaz. They've traded away a lot of good players. And so now that's probably making them even harder to trade with. So anyway, Cleveland, prove us wrong. You don't spend money. They had a really ugly, disappointing season. They need offense in some way. I don't know how they're going to get it, but they're here.
24, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. We just talked about them.
Sure.
Here's how their offseason is going to go. Yep. I could tell you. Ready? They're going to pretend that they're going to bring Shohei Ohtani back. They're not. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to pretend to be disappointed. And then they're going to add some buy-low candidates and pretend to win.
I mean, I would be disappointed. I mean,
it'll be genuine disappointment.
I would be disappointed too if Shohei Ohtani left my team. No, I agree with you. I mean, I don't see them, you know, signing any big deals, but who knows? Who knows with Artie? I have no idea. But there, and it's bleak. It's bleak. So that's why the Ron Washington hire, hopefully, at least you're going to keep falling back on that and be like, hey, at least that happened. That's cool. Next up, the Washington Nationals. Oh, interesting. Some people might think, oh, no, they belong in that bottom group. We think that they might be pushing at least a little bit more towards the direction of trying to be competent. Very difficult in the NL East. Very conflicting kind of signals regarding spending power and spending willingness, especially with the ownership situation where it seemed like they were about to sell. Now it seems like they're definitely not going to sell. A lot of strange things going on at the upper levels. We know, you know, Rizzo and Davey ultimately end up staying. They had some good things happen with the young groups there, but there's still a lot of holes on this roster, a long way to go to be competitive. Do they want to be aggressive and bring in some players to actually help them win in a real way that's more than just Jamer Candelario as a trade chip? We're going to find out. But I think the Nats are an interesting spot to watch this offseason.
Reese Hoskins.
Especially, like, again, with the Boris stuff, it's a great place where Boris might just end up being like, hey, guys, can you take some of... Like, this sounds nuts. Like, Matt Chapman, okay? If the Nationals decide... Like, that's their base has been just a catastrophe for the Nationals, basically, since Ryan Zimmerman's been gone. Or, I guess, since Rendon's been gone. Like, that's been... If they were just like, hey, Matt Chapman... You're our franchise third baseman. Improve our defense. Like, give us a level of competency. Like, great. That's something.
Jason Worth with a buzz cut.
Yes.
Next team.
Yes.
The Miami Marlins, who embarrassed themselves by embarrassing Kim Ang, who said, thanks, but no thanks, you buffoons. The Marlins went out and hired Peter Bendix as their czar of baseball doings. Mm-hmm. That happened like last week. We have no idea how Peter Bendix is going to run this organization, what type of changes he's going to make, how payroll is different. This team is coming off a playoff berth. There are still a ton of question marks on this roster. Very intrigued to see what they will do. If there's anything we know about Peter Bendix from him being with the Rays, it's that don't expect a lot of money. It feels like he was brought in to raise-ify this place, and therefore we don't think they're going to be at the top of the free agent market.
No, but I think that because of the way that their roster is constructed, there is a lot of opportunity for trade with them. And they've made trades with the Rays and Peter Bendix in the past. So I'm interested to see how what he sees as the best possible move kind of steps forward to improve the offense. We know they were kind of surprised to retain Josh Bell. That was good for him to opt in, but they will likely be losing Jorge Soler. So there's definitely going to be some offense for them to replace. How they do that is going to be very interesting. We move to our next team in this group, which is the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds, a team, of course, that I have become quite familiar with over the last year and a half. And we started with the conversation about Joey Votto and how Joey Votto will seemingly not be playing in the Reds anymore. But even if Joey Votto's out of the picture, it is still a very crowded position player group, a group that reportedly is already being asked about in trades, most notably Jonathan India. Now, some people look at Jonathan India and say, if you just look at his baseball reference page, you'd be like, why do you want this guy so badly? Like, he's not been that good of a hitter. He's been injury prone. Like, he's not a great defender. I understand all that. I also think I understand why a lot of people teams want Jonathan India, because there is a version of Jonathan India that is a very good player and that is a fantastic guy to have. So is he the one? Is he the odd man out? I would be kind of surprised, but I think that is another team who clearly is going to need to improve the pitching, and are they going to be able to spend on it? We know they are as thrifty as it gets, so I don't have a great confidence in that, but it does feel like there's a trade to make there, and we've seen them be willing to do that. So some tough decisions for Nick Kroll. He proved a lot this year. I think the Reds are heading in a pretty good direction, but still so much to prove from an ownership and from a spending standpoint that we just won't know until the end of the offseason.
That's the bottom 10. Let's keep on rolling forward. The Minnesota Twins, who won the American League Central, unfortunately, their GM, Derek Falvey, or I guess, sorry, president, he's a Pobo.
Pobo
Derek Falvey told reporters, quote, "We pushed our payroll to heights that we had never pushed it before with the support of ownership. We know there is some natural ebb and flow to that. Will it be where it was last year? I don't expect that. I expect it less than that." Which is a long way to say less money.
Yeah, which like sucks because like obviously, I mean he ain't wrong. They sure pushed it higher than I think a lot of us expected. So like while it's easy for us to sit here and say that every owner should be spending $200 million all the time, like he is right. This is the ebbs and flows of this. It's disappointing considering the momentum that they seemingly went into the offseason with, even with the postseason exit, but finally, you know, breaking that drought of playoff victories. They win at home. They have it's all as well. Like, you're feeling good. You want to go in to next season feeling like, yes, let's keep kicking the AL Central's ass. Like, that's how they should be feeling. This kind of messaging does not exactly inspire that level of confidence. However, it's still a good roster. And, you know, the biggest questions, of course, are going to be, how are we replacing Sonny Gray? How are we kind of making this offense a little bit more balanced? That was weirdly the real question. Who's going to be healthy? You have no idea. And so I still expect them to be active, but from a spending standpoint, clearly it doesn't seem like it's going to be in the free agency thing. They're another team. I mean, trades are definitely going to happen.
The Arizona Diamondbacks, who inexplicably were in, you're not going to believe this, make sure you're sitting down, they were in the World Series.
That's
kind of.
What do you mean, kind of?
The last three games, were they?
What are you?
Were they there?
Oh,
were they
my
really there?
God, the disrespect. This is ridiculous. All right, listen, we already have them this low on here, coming off an NL pennant. But at the same time, just because you win the National League doesn't mean you get. I mean, you get some playoff bonuses and some money from playoff tickets and everything. That's nice. You know, I'm not suddenly expecting them to be top 10 in payroll.
And their TV deal is one of the ones with Bally that kind of fell apart. And so I think that might be a bit of an issue. They're losing Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Tommy Pham. Evan Longoria's out the door. Fun report that they're just going to replace him with Justin Turner.
Yeah.
Third base.
Which, I mean, Justin Turner's a way better hitter than Evan Longoria. So, like, that would be a definitive upgrade. I think the bigger question is, what I was most interested in is Mike Hazen being very honest, being like, yeah, I didn't trade for enough pitching. Like, obviously they were decently aggressive at the deadline. He's like, yeah, he literally said, like, I should have traded for Jordan Montgomery, which is pretty wild. Maybe they go sign Jordan Montgomery. I would be pretty surprised. But at the same time, like, if that is really where they could kind of bulk up their roster.
I just don't see them spending a lot of dough. I think if they add to one of their groups, it'll be on the offensive side.
Yeah.
That lineup lacked punch at times in October, even though they made that run. Mm-hmm. The pitching, there isn't, even though, like, yes, game 4, was a bullpen game. It was bad. They have enough young arms in that system that I don't anticipate them. They'll add like a low end
Michael Wacha,
maybe like up to Giolito, but I don't think they'll be in the Snell.
Ooh, Giolito, I like that.
Nola market.
No, I agree with that for sure. Tampa Bay Rays, another team that, again, they did actually spend some in free agency last year, and it worked out. Would they continue with that? Or is this going to be an offseason where we're talking about them trading Tyler Glass now? Again, no matter what the Rays do, we're still going to assume they're going to win 90 games next year. But that roster, every offseason, has so many different directions they could go. This offseason is no different. The trades that they can make range from all kinds of extreme stuff, leading up to, of course, a potential Glasnow deal. So they're always in the news. But if they want to also maybe spend the way that they did last offseason with Eflin, maybe, it worked, right? Like, if they give Seth Lugo 3 years, I'm like, oh, shit. Watch out. Like, Seth Lugo, they know exactly what they want in that guy, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go after one of those pitchers.
Next up, the Toronto Blue Jays, who dropped the Chili in October, fumbled their way out of the postseason, and they have a lot to replace on the offensive side.
Yeah, so obviously Chapman gone and Kiermaier gone is a pretty big deal. I don't know. Like, this is a team that presumably doesn't have to worry about the very crowded pitching market. They are one of the few teams that has a pretty solid rotation in place. Very few teams can say that.
Four starters that they can depend on, and Alek Manoah.
But still, it's Alek Manoah is still the fifth guy you're talking about. It's not like they have it all lifted on there. Whereas a lot of teams, so many other teams, are going to be going after this extreme depth of pitching at the top of the market, middle of the market, everything. There's not a lot of bats out there for them to try and replace Chapman with if it isn't going to be Chapman. And so now we're again talking about, does the trade make sense? Are we just going to go all out for Cody Bellinger? You know,
like Heimer, Candelario.
Makes sense. Right. Like, there's a few of them, but there's fewer options, whereas all the teams looking for pitching, they have a lot more to choose from. So pressure's on Toronto. I know the fans were not in a good place when their season ended and the way that their front office talked about after the fact.
They, the North.
Yes. The Houston Astros. Houston Astros, Jake Mintz, they at least have a GM this time. This time last year, they didn't have a GM. They gave Rafael Montero a hilarious amount of money. They signed Jose Abreu.
And now they don't have a manager.
So they have to find a manager. But I guess that's true. I don't know. I mean, I know, like, you know, the Giants talked about, oh, we have to have a manager that's going to help us cut. Like, no. Ultimately, when you're the Astros and your roster's this good, like, players will probably want to come play for them. But that's, so you don't really need the manager for that as important. But at least Danny Brown's there, and at least he's going to be able to kind of guide this roster in a certain direction. Biggest storylines with them is really more guys that are already on their team. Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, contracts up after next season. Are they able to extend either of those guys?
Martin Maldonado, a free agent.
He is a free agent, and I think they actually already said, like, they're moving on. Like, they said, like, Yiner Diaz is the guy now.
Yiner Diaz is the starter, but they could bring Martin back as the backup.
That's too risky, because then Maldonado's going to end up the starter again. I guess maybe not with Dusty gone now.
That is the bottom half. Let's start with the top half after we take a quick break. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, together in person.
Oh, baby.
You're just as beautiful as I remember, buddy. Oh,
thanks, bud. Appreciate that.
Give me a smile.
Everyone, can you hear that smile?
It was
you
a
hear
grunt.
That nice microphone? I moved my chair, and that's what resulted. I'm smiling, guys.
What an arduous smile. I got a smile. Jake told me to. Okay.
Detroit Tigers, the 15th team on our list here.
Buying stock.
I would argue they could be higher on here. I think they're, you know, the fact that they jumped ahead on the market and traded for Canna, I know that doesn't seem like the biggest deal in the world, but that signals, like, we're trying to add good baseball players. What do they end up bringing E-Rod back? Do they end up spending that money on a different pitcher? Like, they're in a pretty decent spot. Like, I was surprised by how good their pitching was at the end of last season. Tarek Skubal looked great. They had some of their other younger guys look great. Casey Mize is hopefully, you know, really going to be back soon. So there's an opportunity here. AL Central, it's right there. Go for it, Tigers. Like, I would love to see some aggression here.
Payroll right now is at an estimated $79 million.
Oh, come on. Let's listen. I know it's not quite the days of the full, you know, Illich experience, but
you could double that.
Let's get wacky here. I would love to see the Tigers making some noise this winter.
They have three players with guaranteed salaries. Mm-hmm. Not arbitration. Do you know who they are?
No.
Javi
Baez,
who opted into the last 4 years of his deal,
yeah,
which is not good.
No, Mark Canha.
Mark Canha and yeah. Carson Kelly, who
oh,
they picked up his option
wow.
as a backup catcher. That's it. They Jeez, don't have a lot of dough committed.
No. Yeah. Also, there was a great quote from Scott Harris that was like, yeah, so we actually have the DH now as kind of like an open spot for us now. It's like, oh, right, because you like have been needing to play Miguel Cabrera for the last three seasons. And so I think that was part of the Canha acquisition. Like, there is more flexibility now with Miguel Cabrera not on the roster. All due respect. Tigers are interesting.
Literally,
I think they can end up in the top 10 of relevance teams this winter.
Literally more flexibility.
In every sense.
Their whole roster can now touch their toes, respectfully.
Number 14, Seattle Mariners. We have the Mariners and Orioles back-to-back here. Listen. Pressure's on. Jerry said a bunch of dumb stuff when the offseason began. It doesn't really matter the things that he said. This is true for most teams. Same with we said about Brian Cashman. What are they going to do about it? They cannot have it. They know they got embarrassed last winter being like, this is it. This is what we need to do to build around our core and then go win a division. Obviously, it didn't happen. They missed the playoffs. They look like a bunch of dummies. They know the pressure's on. I hope that they are aggressive. But also, it is a two-way street. Free agents don't usually want to come to Seattle. So now they have made it seem like they have not actually been trying that hard to sign free agents, which makes it harder to give them benefit of the doubt. But also, you know, it is a decision that the players will also have to make. So we will see what happens there. They are going to have to add offense one way or another. And they are also a team like Toronto who has a lot of pitching. And if they choose to trade from that, we could see some very interesting trades, especially if those trades are with your Baltimore Orioles, who have a billion infinite hitting prospects. They can't all play at the major league level, though many of them are ready to. Is this the time when Mike Elias finally decides, hey, all right, fine, I will trade, you know, Heston Kjerstad for Dylan Cease. Okay, I will trade, you know, Jordan Westberg for whatever. Or they could say, I don't know what the, if you want to pull up the Orioles payroll, or the Orioles could actually spend some money. And even if that's not Aaron Nola or Blake Snell, there's all kinds of other good pitchers that would make them a better baseball team that they could very realistically sign.
The Orioles have an estimated $74 million committed. Yeah. They do have a pretty hefty arbitration class.
Okay.
I think
sure.
it's like 17 players.
Right. So that's that, which is all right. So that's a lot of work. That's not that much money. I mean, it is a good amount. It is a lot to deal with if you're in the, you know, the inner workings of the Orioles front office and all the agents involved with that. That is a complicated process. Whatever. At the same time, your payroll is still well under $100 million, and if you're not going to spend it now, coming off a 100-win season when you couldn't win a playoff game because your pitching wasn't very good, just, I don't know what more you need to see.
Here's a take: you should be spending more millions than wins, always.
Hmm. Okay. So if you have, right, if you're a 62-win team, 62-win, so you're fine with your $62 million payroll.
Got to be higher. Got to be at least 67.
Okay. Interesting. Definitely falls apart at some point. That really makes the Padres look, and Mets, very questionable ratio there. Speaking of Padres, Padres are next. Because we know they've already declined all these options, it seems like the strategy now is, can we get rid of enough money and not trade Juan Soto? That seems to be the game plan. But also, who's going to pitch? That's the bigger question.
Who's going to manage?
Who's going to manage is also a big question. So it seems like there's a lot of questions with the Padres. What a concept. But at the very least, while the Padres have done a pretty good job at winning the offseason many times in the past, I do not see any scenario in which they can win this offseason, truly. Like, prove me wrong, AJ Preller. I don't know. Like, they're not going to, I don't think, maybe they change their mind. They say, yeah, sure, let's do it again. Let's sign another guy to $100 million. I don't think that's going to happen.
I think that's a good thing.
Maybe that is a good thing.
Focus on winning the season.
maybe that's the exact thing that needs to happen.
The Atlanta Braves.
They win the season all the time.
Kind of.
Regular season anyway. They are our next team. They have a very complete roster, obviously, certainly on the offensive side of things. They don't have a left fielder. So that is one where maybe they have Von Grissom do it, but otherwise it seems like that's the one spot there. Pitching, it seems like they have a lot of depth, but also still a lot of questions. They brought back Charlie Morton, but he's not exactly a sure thing, and they've certainly had some injuries that they're still going to have to deal with. So, listen, it's not like the Braves are going to do nothing. We just won't know about it until their press release comes out.
Michael Brantley?
They could probably do better than that. but
can they? It's a soft market.
Yeah. But like, why don't they sign Gurriel? I don't know. That's I feel like they've said their payroll is going up. They have room there. Like, I feel like they could get a pretty good player. It's a good example of like they are not going to need Gurriel more than desperately more than a lot of other teams, but they might just do it anyway because that's how the Braves operate.
You know who could be a good fit there? Mm-hmm. Adam Duvall.
Yeah, I've seen that 50 times.
Jordan.
I've forgot how many times. Yeah.
Jason Hayward.
Yeah. I actually thought about that. Why not, man? Like, that's perfect. I don't say absolutely. I think Jason Hayward's going to do decently well this winter. I think he
finally Jason Hayward earns some money.
Yeah. But it's a very different than the last time he got the big contract. All right, top 10. Here we go. New York Mets.
The question with the Mets is, can Steve Cohen cosplay frugality for 3 months?
Yes.
He has said that he's not going to spend. Do you believe that?
I don't believe that. Let me pull up the I just want to pull up the Scott Boras quote about the Mets, which I thought was very funny and kind of confusing, but also I understood what he was trying to get at. This is what Scott Boras said about the New York Mets. Where is this?
I have it right in front of me.
You do have it.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you have the bigger jet and you say you're going slower, you're still going faster. That's what I would say about the Mets.
Everyone's like, oh. So the point is, they still have a big jet because they're really rich. but either way, I don't know what that actually means. You know what? You're right, Scott Boras. That's exactly right. That tells me exactly what the Mets are going to do.
I have no idea. I think, here's my prediction. I think they extend Pete and add some pieces. I don't think David Stearns is going to break open the pocketbook. I think we'll
get Yamamoto. Yamamoto's the only guy I think they would sign.
Because he's younger.
Yeah. And I think it's more likely to happen than Ohtani. So
we're going to get an Ohtani-Steve Cohen meeting.
Yeah.
We're going to get a picture of that.
Oh, I wouldn't count on that. I don't think Ohtani's meeting with anybody. There's my crazy hot take.
Whoa.
picture with Steve. You think, where are they going to do that? Where are they going to meet? In pub? Are they going to do it like purposefully? Like, does Steve Cohen want to be seen with him?
Just like, yeah, like a photo.
Shohei, oh, hey, how about we just meet like in, you know, in front of the Times Square Toys R Us? No one will notice.
No free ads. All right. Next up, the Boston Red Sox, who have a new chief baseball operator. Member of the tribe, Craig Breslow.
Damn. So this is a pretty aggressive ranking for them because
I think they're going to spend some money. I think the Red Sox are under pressure to go for it and to put a little bit more coin mm-hmm. into the pot.
But again, same kind of thing with Bloom. Like, we saw them spend last offseason, right? We saw them go after Yoshida last offseason.
The Devers extension.
The Devers extension. That's true. And it also does seem like, again, similar to the Yankees, they are embarrassed. They finished in last place.
Below the Yankees.
They were below the Yankees, and the Yankees were an embarrassment. So think about
that. Red Sox, Yankees, fourth and fifth in the division.
Yes.
How the times have changed.
Literally has never happened. I actually am pretty sure that has never happened before.
Next up, the Milwaukee Brewers. Seems high Ooh. For a team. Well, they have the keys, baby.
Yeah. This is a team. This is probably the biggest news or reports coming out this week, and especially because it comes from Rosenthal. A lot of report. There is going to be all kinds of random stuff that comes out on Twitter, like, listen, if Ken is writing it, if Jeff Passan's writing it, pay attention. Not that other reporters can't be right, but when it's specific rumors about the direction of something that's going to happen, not necessarily connecting teams and players for free agency, whatever, but if it's about something, a direction that a team is going, they are very rarely wrong on that.
They don't toss shit at the wall.
Yeah. And so when Ken Rosenthal reports that the Brewers are basically open to moving anybody, now we have to pay attention.
Touchables.
They're mucho touchables. And because of that, Corbin Burns, of course, first and foremost. Brandon Woodruff, also free agent after next year, but also will not be pitching next year after having shoulder surgery. He's part of that equation to some degree because he's still going to be making a bunch of money while he's rehabbing his shoulder.
Do you want to trade for a good dude can't play?
Yeah, and then if you could extend him, you could, I don't know. There's versions of that. Willie Adames, they have other, or they already obviously got rid of Canna. So this is a team that, not that they're going into full rebuild mode, but it seems like they trust their young group that is arriving at the big league level, you know, Sal Frelick, Jackson Chourio next year, that says, all right, 2024 might not be great, but we're not going to suck forever. Let's clear some money and figure it out. And like Christian Yelich, I don't know where he factors into this.
Brewers fans just spend the year spray painting ass onto various signs.
Any sign that says council on it, make sure that happens.
The city council sign, just write ass on it. Next up, the Philadelphia Phillies. What have we learned about them already? GM Dave Dombrowski, Pobo Dave Dombrowski.
Sorry, Sam Fold.
He basically said they're moving on from Rhys Hoskins. Bryce Harper is going to be the everyday first baseman next year. When that becomes official, when Rhys signs with the Pirates or something, we'll talk about it then. That's the first part. Second part is we got a report that they're looking to trade away Nick Castellanos, which I have heard as well.
Yeah. Good luck with that, though.
Don't think it's going to happen, but I do think they're going to try. Then the last thing with the Phillies is Aaron Nola is a free agent. Do they try to replace him? Do they re-sign him? They will need another arm in the rotation.
Yes, they will. Texas Rangers, your World Series champions, not in our top five for the offseason.
Not my World Series champions.
Not, yeah, you think it was, you watched it. I don't know what more you needed to see. They definitely won. And they've also been extremely relevant the last two offseasons, which could be a reason to say that the team coming off the World Series should be even higher on this list. But I would say it's the opposite, because they're probably like, damn, our team's pretty freaking good.
Job finished.
And honestly, yeah, job finished. Sorry, Evan Carter. If Ray Davis, like, I am really curious about this dynamic for the Rangers, because it's very easy for the last 3 years for Ray Davis to be like, oh, what's another this? Well, we've never won a World Series. Oh, another $100 million? Well, we've never won a World Series. He's human. At this point, is he going to be that motivated to win another one? I think yes, of course, Chris, yeah, to some degree. You can't tell me that it's the same thing. You can't tell me it's the same level of urgency. They've proven a lot. The offense is going to be amazing no matter what happens, even losing Mitch Garver potentially. Like, that is going to be one of the best lineups in baseball again, where they fill out the pitching with a lot of injury question marks still. Jordan Montgomery gone, Scherzer, who knows, DeGrom obviously still out. I would expect them to be active with the pitchers again.
Top five.
Let's do it.
Top five. Dylan. No. The Chicago Cubs. Do they follow up the Craig Council move with other stuff?
Yeah. So again, it's like, was that a sign if they're going to spend $40 million on a manager, will they spend more on whatever? Oh, they're going to be the most aggressive on Ohtani. Doesn't mean anything to me. The teams that are most aggressive, like, I, again, reports about teams being aggressive on Ohtani does not tell me anything. Of course, the teams want to sign Ohtani. So
being aggressive on Ohtani is like, oh, you're doing a lot of swiping on Hinge.
Yeah. I hope so. If you're on there, isn't that the point? Like,
yeah. Like, you're doing two swipes a day? Yeah. For what?
If you might as well. Listen, Ohtani, like, yes, good. I hope the teams that have money want to have Shohei Ohtani on the team.
But also, it doesn't tell me anything.
If
you're on Hinge swiping away,
right?
Are those translating into first dates, Jordan?
No. I certainly can't answer that question.
That's very true.
There's still a lot of reason to expect them to be, I think, aggressive. You know, they bring back Hendricks. Would they have done that if Stroman doesn't opt out? That's a good question. Either way, definitely parts. I mean, listen, that's a team that should be motivated. We talked about the Rangers who won the World Series. Maybe they're less motivated. Cubs did not win the World Series. Didn't come close.
No.
So they are going to be motivated to kind of make some moves there. And I think that's very related to our number four team, which is the St. Louis Cardinals, another team in the NL Central who just had a horribly disappointing season, way worse than anything we've really ever seen from them in our lifetime. They decided to trade pieces away at the deadline. They kind of stocked their upper levels of their farm system. But no one is looking at the Cardinals and thinking this is a multi-year rebuild. They have to get at least two pitchers to fill out their rotation. Is it three? Are they signing them? Are they going crazy in free agency? Last year, it was just Wilson Contreras and nothing else. Are they going to be more aggressive? Are they going to also trade some of their young hitters for pitching? So many directions, but they have been very clear the whole time. They have publicly said, them saying we need pitching means a lot more than any other team saying we need pitching. And so I'm taking them very seriously, and that's why they're in the top five.
Their estimated payroll is lower right now than where the payroll was last year. And so you would expect them to spend back to that amount, which is like 180, go over it.
Here's the other thing. Even though they suck this year, people were still at the games. Tickets were paid for. The Cardinals, they are raking it in. Were still in seats. So that is not going to change, and that enables them to do some interesting stuff.
The New York Yankees, we talked about this on last episode. We don't have to spend too much time here. They just got to figure it out.
I mean, yeah. There's no... They have to do something. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what version of this offseason is going to make us feel. But, man, I mean, we were feeling good. We were feeling good about them last offseason. And it was so bad. So bad. So I don't know what it looks like. There are a few options. For them, there's a few very obvious options like Bellinger, I would say. And so if they can get that to happen, if they can get Yamamoto, whatever. They're just in the toughest spot because the offense is the bigger concern. And there's just not that many options. So if they get backed into the giant Bellinger contract, that would really be something. I mean, I think it would make them better. I think Bellinger would hit a lot more home runs there, probably. But still shaky. It is a nervous time for the New York Yankees. Fine with me, though. Pretty funny to watch.
Very funny to watch. Number two, the San Francisco Giants, the favorite team of producer Chris. Mm. Estimated payroll is currently $50 million lower than where they ended last year. Last winter, they tried to get Aaron Judge. How'd that go, Chris?
Not so good.
No. They tried to get Carlos Correa. How'd that go, Chris?
Not so good.
They did get him to San Francisco
for
one night.
He was ready to be introduced.
He was in town.
He wouldn't have made them that much better this year.
Nope.
Aaron Judge probably would have got them in the playoffs. Point is,
we did get Austin Judge, though.
You did get him. Which was honestly a better acquisition.
That was fire.
Also, producer Chris is here, too. Hey, Chris. Great to see you.
What's up, guys?
I mean, again, it's like we know they're going to be aggressive, but long way to go. This is not a roster I'm like, damn, they got this figured out. Okay, great. You have Bob Melvin here. Is he helping you recruit people? Probably to some degree. At the same time, they are more than one big free agent signing away from really challenging the top of the division.
But they got to do it. They're under pressure.
They sure are.
Pobo Farhan Zaidi is feeling the heat a little bit.
Yeah, they are. Now, if they can have an amazing offseason, will they be in position to challenge our number one team, the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Why are the Dodgers one? Very simple. They are the Ohtani domino.
Here's my one question. I think, like, if they don't sign him.
Yeah.
Will it be viewed as like a disaster? Like the degree to which people, which to me is absurd because we just still don't actually know. But like people have been putting him on the Dodgers for so long that I think I agree. But it's going to be so interesting. Now, obviously, there's varying degrees of disaster because if he signs, it's a big difference between him signing with the Giants and signing with the Yankees or signing with the Mets or signing with whatever, right?
The Reds.
As the Reds, of course. That's going to be a different. That will look different related to the Dodgers as it will.
One of two things will happen to the Dodgers this offseason. Mm-hmm. They will either sign the best baseball player we have ever seen mm-hmm. for the most money any team has ever given an athlete. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, they don't do that, and they are criticized into oblivion by their fan base. Because everything the Dodgers have done over the last 2 years has pointed to them banking on Ohtani's arrival.
Yeah.
Those are the two options. That's it. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's why it's fun. Now, I will say if they don't sign him, they will have a large amount of money that they will probably try and spend in other ways. What that looks like, I don't know. But if they can get him, Mookie, Freddie, Shohei, not bad.
Not a bad situation.
Now, again, embarrassed by the Diamondbacks in the playoffs. And
if they had
Shohei Ohtani this past year as the DH, it seems like they probably would have still lost that series. But, you know, that doesn't mean they shouldn't want him. So I agree. It's measuring that the degree to which we are all putting it on them is fascinating. And that is the one that we have to kind of finish with, because it is about that. It is about Dodgers and Ohtani and the degree to which we assume that is going to happen.
That's our show. Next week, we will get a little bit more player focused with some of the free agent discussions. We will do a mail bag. And I'm sure we'll talk about a couple more new managers.
Yes, I would assume so. We'll get the Padres definitely coming up soon. Maybe
Jordan,
Astros. Yeah.
Where can AJ Preller email us?
AJ Preller, he has nothing else going on. So AJ, email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Thank you to Chris Tyler. And Isabel is also here. Isabel, for producing this podcast, we really appreciate it. And to be here in the SiriusXM studios, we're going to go enjoy some Dominican Winter League baseball in New York City. We'll report back on that on Monday for sure. But until then, everyone have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you all very soon.
SiriusXM podcasts.